We're back and we're podcasting. The Mariners just came back and won a ridiculous baseball game, 9-8. Huge comeback. They have won 14 of their last 19 games. Everything is great. Everything is fun. I am joined by Scott Weber. As usual, Scott, what is up?
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of the team.
Speaking of the team rounding us out and providing us with all of our younger generation swag is David Skiba. David?
My whole house is cool. I can do anything good.
I'm the guy that, like, they interview everybody about him and there's like, he just doesn't have a thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's your that, but that is a thing in itself.
Is it? Is the lack of a thing a thing?
I mean, Tom Brokaw made a career off it.
What?
Thingless.
You have no idea who Tom Brokaw is.
I heard him once on the radio.
No, that was
you know what the radio
TV
is
when you were a baby. You just didn't have good eyesight.
I know who
the
hell Tom Brokaw is. I'm not three.
But you were when he was last on air.
Brian Williams took over that throne in like 2005.
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah.
Okay. Whatever. Dudes, the Mariners.
Yeah. They're good.
Pretty sweet.
They're very baseball good. Team?
Yeah. Like, I don't know what to...
Now they're more than baseball team. They're baseball team that continues to win and slap dingers all over the damn ballpark.
Let me ask you guys this. David, I already think I know what the answer to your question is, but I'm still going to ask it to you because I want to hear your answer. I have found it shocking how quickly my arrogance has skyrocketed as the Mariners have been good over the last 19 games. It's been 15 years of them being a miserable shit heel baseball team and 19 games where they go 14-5 and I'm just strutting down the street whistling.
Wearing my ascot.
Come at me, bro. Is my current mood.
You make get baseball fun again? Too late.
They already done did it. Yeah, it's been really, 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 really fun. I just, I'm not a really sure how to feel about it because it's still really early, you know?
It is. I think that's about where I'm at right now. I'm just like, this is really fun. Let's just another one.
Yes,
I just did it. One. I didn't mean to do it, but I did it because you say it so much.
Not
DJ Khaled.
It's like there's no line for the roller coaster and you just get off and you're like, I'd like to go again, please. And you're not thinking about what time the park is going to close. You're just like, there's no one in line right now. I would like another one. Please, sir. May I have some more? That's where I am right now. Best part about baseball. There's a game tomorrow and a game the day after that. Just keep it going. Keep it going. More fun.
Well, and I think we were all... to varying degrees, like cautiously optimistic to David would be how I would describe our range of emotions yes. coming into the season. But, you know, it's just
on a scale of us to David to Colin, where do we have miss you, Colin?
Miss you, buddy. I think the thing that stood out to me with this run that they've been on is how it has still felt like not everything has gone right. You know what I mean? It hasn't felt fluky the majority of the time. Yes, the bullpen has played over their head. And at some point, Steve Cishek's going to blow a save. And Joel Peralta's magic fairy dust is going to expire. And he's going to crash down to earth. But the things that have been carrying this team have been the starting rotation, which we all felt really good about.
Yes.
Coming into
very legit.
And players like Nelson Cruz and Robinson Cano hitting the hell out of the baseball. Chris Iannetta being a quality, competent average major league catcher.
Yep, there you go.
Yeah, it's just been a lot of... And you know, they've survived things. They've survived this disastrous start by Kyle Seager. They've gotten over Ketel Marte being nothing the first 2 weeks of the year.
Yes, yeah.
Leonis Martin's batting average is below 200. Nori Aoki has far...
So Kyle Seager's.
Adam Lind has been generally a nothing. And yet here they are, 16-11. With one of the best run differentials in the American League. And so it's like, it feels like we're good, but if things really break our way, they could be even better, you know?
Yeah, I think a lot's broken the Mariners' way. They've won a lot of close games. They've had a lot of... In the last few games, too, or in the past week, they've gotten a lot of runs off errors. I think that that's something that's gone their way lately. But when you talk about there's a lot of nothing on the team... We've talked about this before. I think the primary difference there is you said Iannetta. It's not that guys are giving nothing now. It's that they're giving, like, say nothing is more than negative, right? You have guys like Adam Lind. He's been very bad. Kyle Seager's been bad, but they haven't been like these like disasters. Like Mike Zunino last year, that's below nothing. That's like, I don't know, what's the floor beneath the floor? That's where he was.
Mariners, and now I believe, is the official title of that.
No, come on, we ain't doing that anymore.
Are we not? Is that dead? Can we kill that yet?
It's temporarily. I think it's dead.
Here's what I will say for the Seattle Mariners offense right now. As of right now, the Chicago Cubs bust a team WRC of 111.
Pretty good.
The Seattle Mariners are 112.
Wait, that's not true.
Yes, it's
true. Park adjustment. That's why that is.
The best offense in the AL is the Red Sox, WRC plus of 117. Their batting average ball in play is .337. The Seattle Mariners batting average ball in play is .274. Offense has a ton of room to improve.
I think I agree with that. And Scott, I'm not poo-pooing what you're saying at all too, because they have one. I think that if there's anything that's gonna that's really obvious you can point to and say, well, that's not gonna stick, it's gonna be them winning all these one run games. You know, like the game on last Friday against the Royals, where if Salvador Perez hits that ball 5 more feet, then the Royals win that game. Or if the umpire gets the call right on third base and calls it fair. Cshek closing out two one-run games in this series with the A's alone with the tying run on second. Like, that's going to start to break. You know, that's not going to last. But you see things like, The stuff that has gone wrong is in some ways encouraging. Like Adam Lind, we don't expect him to be this bad. He has too much of a track record, and he's not old enough where we really expect. It's possible that he's collapsing and that this is just his death throes, but it's unlikely. And then you look at somebody, one of you or maybe both of you referenced Kyle Seager. I'm looking at Kyle Seager right now, and he has a batting average of 192 and a WRC plus of 104. So he's figured out, even with all of this rotten BABIP luck, to still be an above-average offensive player. So if the BABIP regresses, then you're going to be looking right back at what Kyle Seager has always been, which has been a really good offensive player. So there's a lot of reasons to be excited about the team right now. I don't think any of us feel any differently, right?
I mean, Go ahead.
I was going to say, there's no way Adam Lind's keeping up an ISO of 0.68. Or, it's just... Adam Lind is going to turn around, and if he doesn't, I mean, there's a lot of ways to fix a first base platoon. I don't foresee it being an issue the whole year, but right now, obviously, Adam Lind looks bad. I mean, in 77 PAs, he's already been minus 0.7 FOR, so it's ugly, but it feels like he's turning around.
He's definitely hitting the ball harder. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, I was saying, you know, we're talking about these guys that we expect to bounce back, people that are hitting below their expected levels. And even like Leonis Martin is hitting a bunch of home runs, but he's hitting a super low average. And so his overall offensive production is fairly in line with what you would expect. You look at guys that you say, okay, they're going to be better than this. Do you really look at anybody that's killing it right now and say, well, they're not going to keep this up? Like, really, I like Cano.
Yeah,
you could say he's not. Cano's not going to hit 50 homers, but it's going to be replaced by balls into the gap,
doubles,
and more singles, and you know, the average is going to go up from where it is now. If you look at that overall line, like if you look at his WRC plus, is that really out of line? And no, it's in with his career averages mostly. I mean, it's better because of the park adjustment and stuff, but the raw lines don't look out of line at all. Nelson Cruz is doing basically what we expected him to do. He's hitting slightly less homers, but you know, after today, it's clear that he still has
pretty sure that one counted for two today, didn't it?
Yeah, it went 800 feet. So there's nobody on this roster that I look at and say they're definitely not going to do, or they're definitely going to come down from this. Which
the
is
the only one
really remarkable because they're a very good offense already.
Yep.
The only one I could point to, and this hurts for me to say because I had a pretty bold preseason prediction for him, but I can see Seth Smith taking a little bit of a step back. I don't expect him to keep up a WRC plus of 152.
He doesn't need to.
No, he doesn't need to. And I mean, he's walking at 15.3%. Like, it's, he is so stellar right now. And I could talk a lot about Seth Smith. I don't know if we want to, but I mean, he, in my opinion, might be the best trade Jack Z ever made.
Well,
I don't agree with that.
Goody, well, it's a good trade. Exist.
Yeah, well, Goody, trade. Goody, look at, I mean.
It was not just Goody, it was Jason Vargas, too.
Right.
Yeah. But look at, I mean, yeah, I guess.
I actually think the best trade he ever made was when he traded for Russell Branyon again after they were already out of the race.
I think that when he just kidnapped Kendrys Morales. After Kendrys had spent like 9 months like running, for, well, run, quote, air quotes, running for him in the opposite direction of the city of Seattle. And we just hogtied his ass and like,
nope,
nope,
you're not a twin anymore.
And he said, well, screw you guys. I'm going to WRC plus negative a billion and keep you out of the playoffs and then go win a World Series the next year. Fuck Kendrys Morales is the lesson that we took from this.
Every time he strikes out, an angel gets its wing.
And then still loses because that team's bad too. This is what I'm saying. Mariners winning. The Mariners winning. I'm not used to it. I'm going to be awful if they're actually good. It's going to be really something. What else can we are we looking at?
Well, since we touched on Franklin Gutierrez, what is up? Is like, is he bad now?
He's not playing. And that's what I would like to know. Is he not playing because his health is failing him, or is it just that they haven't faced a lot of lefties recently? So I don't know.
He has the equivalent plate appearances right now as like an everyday starter over the course of a week,
right,
plus a day.
There's nothing there.
He's got, what, 40 plate appearances? Yeah, and he's drawing walks. He's got 6 walks. I don't know. We're so far away from it being concerning. If he just has one game in which he gets a double and a homer, then the line would jump so much already. So I don't know.
Yeah,
it's not concerning.
I think my concern is just where the combination of Goody not being able to play every single day and you running with a first base platoon, which is suboptimal just from a basic roster construction point, not saying who they're filling that platoon with and what the merits are there. It kind of limits the team's flexibility for what they can do. But, you know, I'm never, it's going to take a lot for me to really get down on Goody after last year and everything that guy's been through. So
I guess,
go ahead.
What I'm looking at is the lack of power. I mean,
but we saw it all spring training. The guy can still, it's not a
true
question of whether
he
can do it.
Yeah.
He just hasn't been playing.
Yeah, it's such a small sample.
Sure, you know what we were talking about earlier today, and what I'd love to see implemented is the idea of getting him, because he doesn't have to be a strict platoon at bat. This guy's been an everyday Major League Baseball player in his career.
Sure.
I would love to see them kind of get a little bit more creative, and I think they will as the season progresses and guys start needing days off with, you know, let's rest Aoki today, or let's DH Nelson Cruz and give Sardinas, or, you know, we could talk later about whether Sardinas should be set down and Chris Taylor should be brought up. But let's figure out ways to get Goody more ABs, because this guy doesn't have to be. It's not like he's an extreme liability relative to Seth Smith defensively, so
sure,
like, there's room for him to be getting more playing time, and that's kind of my big question, and I haven't seen anybody ask or comment on whether his health is keeping him from playing more regularly. And that's, if he's healthy, I would like to see them work him into the lineup more.
Yeah, I mean, Aoki right now, and I know that your call is you'd like to see Aoki rested for Goody maybe more often. Aoki already has 108 plate appearances. He's only been sat one game.
Mm-hmm.
And it maybe looks like he's turning a corner.
That's because he's the table setter. And that's one of those things that I think managers don't really want to mess with, because then it shifts everybody around in the order. Like, if you plug Goody in for Aoki,
like,
then you're going to be
off, right?
You're going to be swapping some guys around. You're going to be getting people out of the rhythm. So that's why I think it hasn't changed this early.
A ray of light for Aoki right now, because I know, Nathan, you've been down on him a bit, but he is walking at 11%, which is well above his career average. So
I got down on him when he started striking out so much in the first month of the season, because that
– Oh, he's well above his career strikeout
average. Yeah, and that's kind of been his calling card. It's the ability to make contact. at all times.
Yep.
It is funny, though, because we can talk about, like, what he's down on and what he's below and everything, but, like, we all know the exact line that he's going to end up at regardless.
Yeah. Right. I know.
So it's all, you can just say what's going to come up and what's going to come down. We already know.
Yeah. True. He's just such a, he is a weird ass MF-er to watch play baseball. And I say that having watched a lot of weird ass MF-ers play baseball. I don't know if I've ever seen anybody with Nori Aoki's exact skill set. Like, it looks like he's playing the game blindfolded at all times. Like, just...
He's a Hunter Pence slap infielder, or slap hitter.
Yeah. Like, all of my...
Do you think Nori Aoki owns a hoverboard?
Is he not playing with one, like, all the time? That would make so like much sense.
Like the battery percentage on it's like 8%. His defensive routes would make so much more sense.
Just
rolling around the outfield, making horribly misshapen figure eights.
Fly ball gets it. No, God damn it! I said backwards.
I'm trying to plug my headphones in.
He has an invisible hoverboard. That's totally why New York takes his routes. Oh God, he's not a bad baseball player. He's weird as shit. That's just
he's part of the piece of this team is 16-11, and Jerry DePoto worked some sort of wizard magic to make it a 1-9 that every day you see four runs coming out of, and he just made it work with a weird cap situation and strange contracts, and Nori Aoki, he got him at the right price, really.
Can we get a You're a Wizard Jerry drop?
A Wizard Jerry.
Still the greatest line in the history of Gnome and Bedlam. We'll probably never top that one.
She'll just quit after that.
In fact, we're not going to air this episode at all, are we?
I didn't think it was getting live.
No. We'll just keep taking guests, but we'll never air anything.
never record.
It's going to be a shame if the Chilean red wine banter doesn't make its way on.
Yeah, a little bit later.
Oh,
we're going to have
Sorry, I lifted the curtain. We record segments out of order. Sorry.
Yeah, we have a guest later who's going to make some very astute wine recommendations and observations. So going forward, I wanted to talk a little bit about May, and we didn't have this on our itinerary, but it kind of feels like with the way the rest of the Mariners' schedule works out after surviving April, this is their month where if they're going to have – I can't remember which Mariner team it was. There was one Mariner – I think it was 2007 where they had one amazing month, and then they basically played .500 the rest of the year, and they ended up with like 88 wins or something like that. And it feels like if the team's going to have –
Is that 2007?
Yeah, that's what I think it was. Yeah. If they're going to have that kind of month, it's going to be this month. Because
this is a big month.
Yeah, they've got a series against the Padres and I think the Reds and two series against the, I think you guys may have heard, last place, Houston Astros.
Lastros is the proper name.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're correct. Lastros.
I thought it was the Trashstros.
No, that's the Trashiners, we found out on Twitter. That's the Oakland A's fans' nickname, which is probably what he calls them because that's all he sees when he's in O.co is trash. So he just calls everything that.
The smell of it. I love the smell of it.
The trash? It's everywhere. This feels like the month. Like if they, I'm really excited because right now as we're recording this, the Mariners are a game and a half out ahead of the Rangers in first place. But
you couldn't even say it without Chris. It's like you had a reaction.
Yeah. Game and
it's
a like half a out behind
out in ahead first place.
It's a tick.
The Mariners are so. It's like that scene in Liar Liar when he's trying to say that the pen is red.
Yeah.
So the remaining schedule for the Seattle Mariners in May involves only one team currently above .500, which is the Baltimore Orioles. The rest of the month we'll see them.
Trumbo's Baltimore Orioles.
The Trumbo-led Baltimore Orioles. We go the Rays.
9:30 game on Thursday the 19th. Ooh.
Yeah, such a strange, weird getaway. But then they have to fly to Cincinnati, which I'm sure everyone needs to prepare for hours for because
the Queen City.
How can you do that mentally? So they go Rays, Angels, then a road trip out to Baltimore that includes Cincinnati. Then they come back home to the A's, the Twins, and then they start a series with the Padres to end the month.
Man, it's asking a lot, but it would really be choice to see them get an 18 to 20 win month and go into June with like a 4 to 5 game cushion, because the schedule gets a lot harder towards
August. Well, as Jake Mailhoop pointed out to me when I was talking about May, you know, then you, the flip side of it is shit, their August is a grind.
Yeah.
So yeah, you got to
talk about last week. It's, yeah, it's brutal.
You got to take advantage of this May. And they have two off days coming up. They have an off day next week on Thursday, and then the 2 weeks later they have another off day on Thursday.
And they have another one in between too, on the
oh, that's right, they have that Monday,
16th. Yeah.
They have three off days.
That's a tough road trip after that, though. They have that day off, and then they've got a flight to Baltimore, and then after that they've got that 9:30 game in Baltimore, and then they fly to Cincinnati, and then they have a Sunday getaway game in Cincinnati, and then the next night they're back at home against the A's. So that's a lot of travel for
a lot to ask.
9-game stretch.
Yeah.
And you start to wonder, I mean, the rotation's been so good, but you start to wonder, you know, who's going to be the first chip to fall?
In the rotation?
Yeah.
I was just about to ask that. Who's I don't know if I feel like anybody's going to.
Who's the guy we're most concerned about?
Well, it's Felix. In the
rotation?
Is it? It's not for me.
No? Okay,
for me, I don't know what to expect out of Wade Miley. I don't expect bad things, but I don't know what to expect out of any of his starts.
I just feel like he's captain of the USS Whelm and will be forever. Like, he's just going to be Wade Miley all the time.
Like, I have much more confidence. I mean, granted, this is probably recency bias, in a Nate Karn start right now than I do in a Wade Miley. But it's not like I'm fearing that Wade Miley's going to give up 6 runs.
I mean, are we not concerned about Ibukuma? He's striking out less batters than he ever has. He's walking more batters than he ever has. His velocity is now averaging 87.5.
Yeah.
I mean, this
Jared
is
Jared Weaver
like,
thinks that's awesome.
This is the guy I'm most concerned about, if we're being serious. I don't know if he's throwing hurt. He's pretty much always hurt, so he probably is. But he has not inspired a lot of confidence, despite the good start that he just had, where he didn't generate many swings and misses.
It probably is. Let me ask you this question, because I'm not saying this to be a contrarian, but I'm just kind of curious. For years, swings and misses were a huge deal with pitchers, and rightly so. That is a really effective way of analyzing pitcher quality. Is that still something that we kind of cling to? Is that still a tenet, like a core tenet of pitcher evaluation?
I think when coupled with other things, it is. Like when you look at the fact that his velocity is down,
sure,
and he's walking more batters, the control hasn't totally been there. Mm-hmm. It's like a total package thing. You bundle them all up and you see something concerning. Like in isolation, no, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. I think some, like Chris Sale, is pitching to more contact than he ever has, and he's still killing it.
Chris Sale,
He's Chris Sale.
Yeah,
but you know, for someone like Ibukuma, I don't know. It's reflected.
Feels like
elsewhere.
He's playing with fire.
Yeah, you look at his peripherals and they're not good. His FIP is higher than ever. His Sierra is higher than ever. It's, you know, still small samples, of course, sure. But I don't have much confidence when it comes to the mound right now.
Let's define what you mean by concerned. Like, are we concerned that he's going to wash out of the rotation, or are we just concerned he's going to be kind of a weaker link? Because, I mean, Hisashi Iwakuma, even at his current, I mean, his FIP is 4.06 right now. And if that were to hold steady and say he's the Mariners' fifth best starter and he throws 180 innings and doesn't suffer a catastrophic injury, a lot of teams would kill for that kind of fifth starter. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, the concern, it's all relative.
Sure.
I guess the concern is that his number two production may be replaced by Taijuan Walker, which it currently
he settles
in somewhere.
Taijuan Walker is, as of right now, a top 10 pitcher in the entire of the MLB.
Ty is pitching very well. And that's kind of what I was, Scott, that's what I was going to kind of transition there is I feel like the cool thing with the rotation is there's kind of these, like the stocks are all kind of trading a little bit differently than we're used to with the five, specifically Felix and Iwakuma, who were the water carriers for so long for this rotation. But it feels like Taijuan Walker has really kind of stepped up, and they haven't fallen off so far that they're not still good major league pitchers. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And
it's Taijuan Walker.
I think Taijuan the question Walker, then becomes like, how real is Ty, and what do we think about?
I think it's extremely real. I don't even think he's touching his ceiling.
Well, I don't know about that.
His FIP is 2.06.
I mean, if we're saying he hasn't touched his ceiling, then we're saying he's better than like Clayton Kershaw. Like, I think that we're.
Well, he's a touch. I mean, he's below Kershaw right now in the. But he, I mean, he's just. He's absolutely. He's not walking anyone.
Yeah, but that's gonna. I mean, he can't keep walking less than one person per nine innings.
But like the ground ball rate is out of control. It's ridiculous. He's not. Yeah, he's not walking anybody. He's still striking guys out.
But we are still much excited.
But look at his BABIP. He's allowing an above league average BABIP.
Yeah. There's nothing that you look at like Ty's peripherals and think, wow, his ERA should not be that low. It absolutely is in line with everything he's doing. So.
And we are, well, the home runs. I mean, if you want to see one big obvious thing, is that his home runs to fly ball is like almost quartered from, no, I'm sorry, almost thirded from last year.
Right. So, he's keeping the ball on the ground.
Yeah.
He's only, I mean, fly balls, he's got 24% fly ball rate.
His stuff feels better to me this year. Yeah. And I'd have
his composure feels better too.
Yep.
Like that's where you talk about the visual thing.
Did you guys all get to watch him pitch in against the Astros last week? David, did you miss that one?
I saw his final frame against the Astros, and even that was filthy.
And it was arguably his best one. But
yeah. I mean those six batters in a row was insane.
It was incredible, and everything was done with a purpose. And that, Scott, I think that's kind of your point. Watching him pitch now, like the way that he carved them up was just, it wasn't like he was grooving, you know, 98 miles an hour down the middle and guys were just missing it. Yeah. Every pitch had a purpose.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful to watch. I mean,
he's so young. God, it's so, what if with him? What if?
Yeah, it's great. He's not yet 24. And I mean, Brendan and I talked about this on the site last week, just about like where we think his career might be going, because I think he and I were both kind of in this idea of, you know, his career could have a fairly high peak, but it could be fairly short just because of how dependent he is on his velocity. But this improved command that we're seeing now that doesn't require 97, 98, and the changeup has kind of been a really big deal. The ability to throw that down. And he showed that a lot in the Astros series. It's you know, I don't know what his ceiling is. I don't know if he's a true major league ace at any point in his career. But right now, so far this year, he's pitched like one through 30 innings. And, you know, if what he is this year is a really good number two, I mean, that's a hell of a thing to have. And the Mariners pitching rotation depth, I would say, has been the one thing that's defined the team so far this year. One through five.
And I mean, isn't there a chance with, you know, let's say, you know, Ty reaches this peak that, you know, whatever it is, five wins or something. Isn't there a chance if his velocity dips that having Felix around could help him manage through that? I mean, you're talking about another ace who certainly managed velocity drops his entire way and is still managing through one.
I mean, I have no way of proving that, but I can't imagine that it's going to hurt. So
can't hurt.
All I'm saying is right now, if you flip on ESPN, all you're going to hear about is Jake Arrieta.
He's good.
Jake Arrieta and Taijuan Walker are currently sitting on the exact same amount of FWAR. Taijuan Walker has one less start, and Jake Arrieta's strand rate is 96%, which is out. It's never going to be that.
Yeah. The Cubs are a big deal, though. Maybe.
Yeah, but Taijuan Walker didn't win the Cy Young last year.
Yeah.
No, fair enough. I mean, I'm not saying he deserves good to be God. in the national media spotlight, but Taijuan Walker right now is absolutely on fire.
Yeah, it's really
exciting.
And I
don't see any reason why it drops.
Yeah, the stuff's going to happen. He's not. I mean, if he ends the season with a 1.8,
he hasn't had a blow up start yet, and it'll happen. And it'll bring things,
which
back
is fine.
But they all get a blow up start.
Yep. Yeah, I'm just saying it's coming for Taijuan, and so that's why I don't know. Do I believe these numbers?
Yeah, he's not going to. He's not going to. And I'm sorry. What?
He's talking shit. He's going to get banged.
Okay, so anything else you guys want to talk about before we go to special guest Zachary Sanders?
Go Biz, roll with it.
Go Biz, roll the Biz.
Get that intro. That.
All right.
Nobody beats the Biz.
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 Today we are joined by a member of our staff. He describes himself as blogger by birth, single by choice. You know him as Zach Sanders. Zach, how are you today?
Do I describe myself that way? That's kind of sad.
Is it accurate?
I mean, if the choice is women's choice, yes.
Yes, it is. Oh, no. So, Zach, you've been on staff for, I think, right around the new year. And by far, your biggest contribution to the internet so far has been, I think, the term Go Biz, which we've been using. For those that don't know, do you care to explain how that came about?
Yeah, I thought it was a good time to sort of take a step back from the season, right? Things weren't going well. We needed something else to focus on, things like, you know, office design, because that's important. So, you know, we need to figure out what the best office design is, and because everyone else likes to sign off with GOMs or GOEMs, I thought it was only natural to sign off as GoBiz, and somehow this has become a phenomenon. This is my contribution.
Well,
this is your legacy.
The team was 2-6 when you wrote that. And after today's win, they're 16-11. So that makes it 14 wins against 5 losses since you have coined Go Biz. And I think it's worked out fairly nicely. I think that to be clear, you didn't intend this as a replacement for GOMS, and I don't think any of us really do. Is that correct?
Oh, no, of course. It's a supplement.
Yeah, it's a complementary term, which is why we sign off GOMS and GoBiz for the majority of the things that we do.
They go hand in hand. Also, it's nice because there's been a lot of biz-related things that have happened with the Mariners recently.
An ownership change.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was big biz.
That's right. That was last week.
Yeah, that just happened.
It's been 2 weeks since we podcastered.
It's true. Zach, let's go away from internet sloganeering and move to another one of your many strengths and talk pitching. I think one of the things that's been really interesting to watch in the young season, and you've, since before the season even started, were a big advocate for Nathan Karns getting the number 5 spot in that rotation. And I feel like largely he's really stepped up and kind of proved you right so far. We talked a few days ago about the introduction of a changeup into his arsenal. And how do you see that? You said that he introduced that last year. Was that correct?
Yeah, I think he might have tried it out a couple times in the minors, but it was never anything really to write home about. And even like beginning of last year, it just wasn't really a real offering. It was just sort of something that faded away and was slow, but he actually sort of made it into a real weapon.
And it looks that way too, don't you think? Like, I don't know if I wouldn't call it his best pitch, but especially against left-handers, he seems to get some real good movement and a lot of swings and misses on that pitch.
Yeah, it's really his one pitch that sort of moves away from lefties. I think that's where it's really helpful. He kind of puts it on the outside corner, lets it fade, and just calls it good.
Are you
that last start of his? He threw the hell out of that curveball.
That's his money pitch, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
That sharp downward break, especially when he can bury it.
Yeah, I think I saw something. He's only given up like 4 hits, and none of them have been extra base on this curve or something.
Until his last start when Chris Davis
yeah. They showed it at the beginning of that start. That was the stat, right? And then promptly after, Chris Davis sends it in the stratosphere.
Yeah.
Oh, so they cursed it. They cursed it. Thanks a lot, guys.
The Mariners don't need help cursing themselves. Traditionally speaking,
the quick segue here too, like related to Nathan Karns, he's been so awesome. But like, what do we think about what James Paxton is doing down in AAA? I mean, is it enough to turn some heads? Past 3 starts, he's given up 2 runs over 17 innings, 18 strikeouts.
Zach,
one walk.
Zach Wayne.
I mean, I think it's nice, but I wouldn't put too much stock in it. I mean, he's always had the stuff, and getting AAA hitters to miss shouldn't be that difficult when you throw 95 with a big curveball. It's just, we'll see, you know, every start really could be his last.
Is he throwing 95 again? Because in spring training, he was considerably lower than that. Do we know?
I don't know.
I still think, I mean... Is there anybody here that would object to the idea of if this rotation holds together through August and the bullpen is still kind of injury riddled, whether or not it's super effective, that they start trying him out as a relief pitcher? I mean, that just seems to make too much sense, doesn't it?
Well,
is he 28?
Yeah.
He's a young 28.
He's 27. Paxton's 27. Okay. Yes, I think so. But I've been on the Paxton for reliever train for a very long time and have taken quite a bit of heat for it in my day. But I think we're finally...
Sound like you.
Well, no, I never said anything that was... Guys, have you seen what Brad Miller's done the last seven games? Just saying. I think looking at where we're at right now and the fact that the team has other options that they could plug into the rotation if they needed to, they have a couple guys that can go swing. Nuno can certainly be your spot start kind of guy that you'd have to stretch out if you did it long term, but why not? I mean, I think that you look at what Montgomery has done, who was a considerably worse starter than James Paxton was at his very best, and you look at Paxton's stuff, and it seems to play extremely well there. I don't know, Zach, what do you think?
Yeah, I think he's a natural fit. I think there'd still be – essentially, you have to work on the same things, right? He's got to work on elevating the fastball and actually kind of just learning to trust it.
Yeah.
But as far as the stuff, like, it's there. That is closer-level stuff.
Totally.
Yeah, they'd be a really nice to that weapon there. Yeah. Go ahead, Dave. Go ahead, David.
Sorry. I was going to say, I always worry about the move to the pen as being so final. Like, I just feel like the stuff and the mentality changes so much that it's really hard to bring someone back out of the pen.
Doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, which is my hesitation with Paxton because, I mean, maybe it's overly optimistic, but I still think he could be a starting option going forward.
Well, it's possible. I mean, we don't want to get too far. We do want to get ahead of ourselves, but we're going to try not to get too far ahead of ourselves. But if he continues to pitch well and this team is doing great in mid-July, I could definitely see him being a player that another organization who doesn't have the Mariners starting rotation would be interested in acquiring. But
David makes a good point there, too. Like, he really, I mean, when you re-signed Iwakuma, you gave yourself the luxury of depth. And the fact that Paxton's killing it in AAA is awesome right now. But do you really want to give up on your insurance policy during the summer stretch? I mean, that's something to think about.
There isn't really anybody past Paxton that we'd be excited about in the minor leagues right now getting a spot start, right?
No.
No.
I can't imagine.
Adrian Simpson.
Actually, I mean, I think he's a bullpen arm.
Yeah, he sounds like he's the guy.
He's actually killing it right now.
I know he is too.
Yeah, he's like been doing killing okay.
It. Local guy too. Bellevue Community College, BCC. Go! I don't know what their mascot is. So go Biz.
I hit a bomb off Adrian Simpson.
Biz. Oh, shoot. I was just going to ask Zach something of great import and deep insight, and it just fluttered away from
me. We're talking about rotation depth in Tacoma.
Yeah.
Cody Martin.
Yeah.
Where is he?
That's where we were going to go. Found him. I'm not sure. You guys have anything else kind of pitching related that's crossing your mind? Oh, I remember what we were going to talk about. We're here to mourn. We're here to – Zach, you're here to eulogize Felix Hernandez. Isn't that correct?
One second. I got to par one out for him. All right.
So, Zach, tell me. All right. So here's what I see. And you tell me if you see things different or if you agree. What I see from Felix is a combination of worse command and worse velocity. And since he still has a lot of movement on his pitches, I see a pitcher that if he regains a portion of either of those can still be a pretty damn good major league pitcher. But with both, like today's game where he has neither, he's really going to be struggling. Is there something else that you're seeing or maybe a little more nuance to it than how I just put it?
No, I think it's exactly that, right? It's not one thing. Mm-hmm. That's the issue, right? If it's just the command, then, oh, he's just going through a rough stretch. He'll figure it out. If it's just the velocity, it's, oh, maybe it's early season. He's going to ramp it up. But, I mean, it's both. It's something that we've never seen except really for when he's been hurt and hiding an injury. So that's kind of what he makes you think about. But I don't know if I'd say that at this point, they're going to have to start looking for it and kind of pressing him and saying, if you're actually hurt, like, we need to sit you down. This is not good.
Yeah. Yeah, but don't we know that Felix's elbow is partly torn?
Andy Van Slyke tried to tell you.
Do we really? I mean, for me, it's actually been kind of remarkable how that got swept under the rug so much. And I know that the source was not the most credible, but like he didn't really have any reason to make up something that specific and that detailed. So it just has always made me kind of think in the back of my mind.
It's disconcerting. I mean, we don't want to talk about this, right? Like, this is like the ultimate Mariner fan sacred cow. that we're butchering.
No one talks. Maybe it's because no one wants to talk about it. It's the elephant in the room.
But I think the fact that I think we can now, because it's easier now because the rest of the team looks so not Mariner-y, that we can kind of let this out and kind of talk about it.
Well, I mean, you know what I worry about with Felix is if there's maybe a change in the mentality of having the team actually succeed around him. And it, because what, it's the second start in a row where we've had the post game interview and he just kind of goes, yeah, I don't know where my stuff went. And I mean, obviously we can't put any numbers on mentality, but is it like, you know, I have this new situation where I know they can pick me up or something. I don't know.
I think that, go ahead. Somebody else was going to jump in there.
No, right? No one was.
Oh, okay. I dynamite drop in, Zach.
I think
that the, you know, Brendan Golowski and I have been talking about this too. I mean, we can't measure this in baseball players, which is why we don't talk about it. Another thing that we kind of sweep under the rug is the idea of competing, I think is the term that scouts use a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think Felix has that. I feel like all season he's been a guy who's been trying to wrestle with, in essence, one arm tied behind his back. And his ability to, like, his previous start on Friday against the Royals, where he managed to gut through, I think, 7 2/3, and it looked like he just was in a similar situation today, where he had didn't have his velocity, he didn't really know where his fastball was going to go, and had guys on base all day. And yes, part of that is just batted balls and play luck. But I've seen Felix do that so many times now that I'm not really worried about his mentality. I'm more worried about what's going on in his elbow, if that makes sense.
Sure. I mean, I'm just trying to avoid the elbow.
Well, I mean, but the elbow is easy. The elbow is easier to fix than the head, isn't it? If the elbow is the problem. If there's actually, wouldn't that, okay, here's a discussion point. If there were an elbow issue with Felix that could be, knock on wood, that could be fixed through Tommy John, wouldn't that almost be good news?
No. No.
It's not. So,
he'd have to be out a whole year. That'd be, what's the point? At this point, I mean, this is the prime. This is when guys are ready.
Oh, I didn't mean now.
Oh, great.
After this, he's only got 3 years left on his deal. I know it seems crazy, but it's true.
Yeah.
And if he has a year, actually, he's got a weird clause that if he misses a year due to injury, then the last year he has a $500,000 option.
But it's not very specific what part of his body gets hurt.
Due to the elbow.
Yes.
Yeah, it is due to the elbow.
It's the John Lackey clause.
If that doesn't confirm the partially torn thing, then I don't know what does, because Slyke said the Mariners have known about it for years.
Yeah. You guys, I hate this. This is a happy time and the Mariners are in first.
What are we doing?
I don't know why are we doing this.
Why are we doing this?
It's because you're
welcome.
That's fine.
Zach, is there something going on with the team that's happy that you would like to talk about?
Yeah.
Yeah, what is it? Nathan pointed out before we went on air, his WRC plus is like 181 or something.
It is. It went up 61 points today. Which, I mean, 120 before that's perfectly fine. But now at 181, it's like, hey, and he hit he hit his first bomb off a lefty today. Is that correct?
Yep.
Yep.
And then the second one was off John Axford on a inside 3-1 fastball that he just
95 mile an hour
kicked the shit out of.
Axford has been filthy this year too.
I know. Do you guys, Zach? It's all small sample size. Do you feel like maybe Deho should be taking some of Lynn's at bats against right handers, or do you feel like it's? I mean, the instinct is that it's still way too early. Adam Lind has a track record here, but do you have any thoughts on that?
I think it's still too early. I think the instinct's right. I mean, we've seen this essentially almost all against lefties.
Yeah.
For Deho, this hasn't been something he's been doing against both guys, and we're like, oh, maybe he can handle righties. It's just at this point, I wouldn't risk it, right? I mean, you've seen Lynn has the track record,
and he's been squaring it up better recently too.
Yeah.
It feels like every one of that dude's hits has been actually against the shift.
But this takes away from the important point, which is that Deho is fun as shit.
He's right? Not prototypical.
I I guess what this earns him is the right to not be automatically pinch hit for when the lefty comes out. I think that that's the kind of incremental way that you can go about it for now to start giving him more at-bats rather than giving him starts instead of Adam Lind. I think that that seems fair.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I'm just happy that he's a big, lovable, you know, Baymax come to life that drops bombs.
Did you say Betamax?
Baymax is from Big Hero 6. You don't have kids, so you wouldn't understand.
No, someone told me not to once.
Zach, do you have children? Against it.
No, I do not have children.
The laugh in your voice is telling.
That sounds like a lot of work.
Dejo's great. I mean, it feels like I feel like Dejo Lee is just another one of what feels like a cascading effect of a lot of small deals that Jerry DePoto's front office has made that have gone right enough that have kind of led the team to where it's at now, where they're 16-11 and this great run differential and all this other stuff. It just feels like he's not this revelation, but he's not a disaster. And
I do wonder though, are we a 2-home run game today away from talking about on this podcast how bad the first base platoon is?
Well, that's mostly Lind though. I mean,
but so we're talking about the good transactions made there when we, you know, there's kind of the elephant in the room of who's
Dejo
in
Lee?
Baltimore.
Look, he's a big guy, David. You don't have to start.
Exactly. Who's in Baltimore right now and could have been wearing the first base glove.
Zach, do you like Mark Trumbo?
No, not really. I liked when we traded for Wellington Castillo. That was the fun part of that deal.
Yeah.
He's hitting for power too this year, you know.
Yeah, he's a good hitter. We don't like catchers that hit. They're awful.
Wouldn't it be strange if he was on this roster, man?
Good God! What's Castillo's contract situation? Is he arbitration eligible at this point?
Yeah, he's still, I think, in year. I think you have 1 or maybe 2 years left of arbitration.
Is there another general manager that could, within weeks, simultaneously make a shrewd deal to acquire a player like Wellington Castillo and then completely give him away like Jack Zarenczyk did? Like, that is a truly unique gift.
I cannot believe
Ruben Amaro did it.
So, yes.
Elite company.
Yes. The best of the best.
Guys, Wellington Castillo's 2016 line is pretty sad for us.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's already, 7 bombs. He's already worth almost 1 FWAR.
Yeah, he's a DH playing catcher. Like, and he
murdered it.
He's
in
even
Arizona
got positive
after
defense
the trade last year.
Yeah, he's even got positive defense from the position.
He pimped a dinger off of Felix, and
yes, he did.
Like month after that trade, and it was of course Trumbo, who wasn't terrible for the Mariners, like was so bad his first month.
Of course,
and then Castillo comes in and just crushes a home run off for Felix. This is all this whole segment with Zach is just going to keep going back to Felix making us sad.
Dude, Wellington Castillo's ISO is almost 300 right now.
Oh my.
So you're saying that I should pick him up for my fantasy team? Zach, did you know that the Lookout Landing Commenters don't care about your fantasy team?
I mean, they should. My fantasy team is amazing.
Yeah, and did you know that Zach has the best fantasy team name I've ever heard? Why don't you tell us what it is, Zach?
Zach.
Not plural. The team.
No, it is singular.
The players on it combine into a unified collective, much like the Borg.
Zach the Collective.
We are in first. We are Zach.
We are all Zach.
Wait, Zach, you're the Boneyard in the Lookout League, aren't you?
Yeah, that's me.
I do have to say you're in third place behind me currently.
Oh, well, I would like to invite you to fuck right off.
Oh, this is why we don't talk about fantasy on the site, because it just gets too combative.
That's why we have the explicit rating on the podcast.
Yes, it is. No, I think we got that when you ran it solo and you had Edgar on last year, right? And Edgar just started dropping F-bombs.
I don't know. The recording was him driving in a car and me recording said conversation with the cell phone held up to the microphone. So he very well could have been, and no one would have been the wiser. I went back and listened to that, and I was like, I get about 40% of that. You get about 40% of those answers.
Oh, man.
You know, since we're on Edgar now, Zach, do you take any weight into the team's hitting turnaround since, you know, theoretically Edgar stepped into the rain there?
No, I think it's more about the players they acquired.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the guys that have been here before Edgar, I mean, they're doing pretty much the same.
It's true. Even worse.
But you know what's interesting about Edgar is that I know the guy that Edgar has spent maybe the most time with over the course of him joining last year and then in spring training is Mike Zunino, and there's results there, but are they meaningful results? Not yet.
Well, and there's no reason to. I mean, we're all on the same page that if Mike Zunino doesn't wear a Mariner uniform in 2016, that's probably a good thing, right?
That's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah. He's put himself back into Stefan Romero territory.
Stop like that. Stop that. Don't doom him so. That's not kind. Zach, let me ask you this question. Do you think it's a fair assessment to say that as far as the way that you've approached the game traditionally and the way that you view it and the way you analyze, you're an analytical man by nature. Is that a fair statement that you would like?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I mean, you write for Fangraphs. You have for years. Do you feel, as this whole sabermetric Moneyball revolution thing has kind of progressed, it kind of feels like the pendulum is starting to swing back more towards a balance between what the eyes can view and what the numbers tell us. Are you still kind of drawing most of your conclusions through the collection of data? Or like we just talked about Nathan Carnes's changeup in his curveball. Do you analyze video at the same time? Like is there a blend there for you, or are you pretty strict on numbers?
I mean, ideally there's a blend, and I think that's sort of always been the ideal, except in the public light, sort of the stathead nerds have had to fight and push up the extreme, right? If you're going to try to narrow your way into some territory, as it were, you have to take an extreme. It's hard to be nuanced.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think you try to watch the video, at least try to pick up, maybe read some stuff if you can, instead of just staring at the numbers. I mean, the numbers in themselves only can tell you so much. I mean, we have such granularity now, but even then, it's all about context, and you can't always get the context just staring at a spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's always a challenging thing. That was a challenging thing for me too, and I'm sure it is for Nathan now as well. Is you look at the numbers and they give you a clearer picture. That's maybe what's different. It might be different than what you're seeing with your eyes, but that's not always necessarily a bad thing. Especially as the sample grows larger and larger, there's recency bias, there's big moment bias, certainly. I mean, when Kyle Seager started to pop some home runs last week and it seemed like he was really turning a corner, you could look at his last six games and the only hits that he was getting were home runs, right? So there's always like value in both, and the balance has always been a challenge. It was for me, and I'm sure it is for anybody that has to write about this game.
Zach, do you feel like, just kind of following up, do you feel like you've altered, like, foundationally any of your process as far as how you evaluate and how you research players over the years? Or are you still, by and large, still running the same formulas and the same techniques that you've used you've been writing for Fangraphs how long? Since, like, 2009?
Yeah.
So it's been a long time. Have you evolved? Do you feel like you've evolved in the way that you approach players and the way that you analyze them, or has it been pretty static for you?
I think it's evolved as we sort of see more essentially publicly available data.
Mm-hmm.
You start to be able to look at more things. It's like we weren't looking at, you know, whiff rate, swing and strike or anything like that 4 years ago, even really. That was just about, oh, can a guy get strikeouts? And that was it. And we didn't look at anything behind it. And now we can see things that, so maybe this is a plus, maybe it's actually a minus, and maybe it's going to change. It's just the more we can see without, in a sense, without having to watch the game.
That's bad signal. That's like a bad signal. Yeah, there's no good TV signal in your mom's basement. I get it. It's fine.
But yeah, I mean, that's sort of where it comes in, right? It's incorporating all the new information, which I think is what any self-respecting analyst should do. And you don't want to stick with your old ways. That's what got to the scouts for stats debate in the first place.
Yeah. And there is almost a healthiness to not watching, as an analyst, to not watching these players too much. Because that's another way to build in bias, is it not? Like, you start getting attached. Like, you see, like, for example, I don't know, Nathan Carnes, who we've been talking about, throw a great curveball. That sticks in your mind. And it's hard to not develop a bias with, oh, that guy has a great curveball. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, I loved Vin Mizarro. That was my guy. Just watching him, like, man, that guy can throw a sinker. That guy can throw a changeup. Like, but, I mean, he sucks. He's awful. It's you see one or two things and they catch your eye and you just keep looking for that, ignore everything else. And that's what it is.
We kind of ran into with Tom Wilhelmsen is, you know, you see that hammer curve, but then it's like, you know, where did he go the last almost year baseball?
Is he still bad this year? I haven't been checking.
To bring it into a Mariners perspective.
Is he still bad this year?
I mean, we all remember that meltdown when we were facing him.
I know. It was fun and sad. So I'm not sure.
You know who else was absolutely filthy? Like, legitimately, was Miguel Batista coming out at like 37 years old as a starter, throwing 93, 94 all the time with serious movement. Oof. That always ended up in the middle of the plate.
Oof. So Tom Wilhelmsen, is not having a hell of a year. We're almost minus a full win in FWAR. And 10 innings pitched.
Good Lord.
To be fair, he now has as many strikeouts as home runs. So that's... He's getting there.
Oh, God.
I also did want to point out, since we brought up Stefan Romero, he is, according to Fangraphs, the only player with his first name to ever play professional baseball.
Who?
What?
Stefan Romero.
Only because he spells it with an F.
Exactly.
Like doofus.
That's not how you spell doofus.
True. You spell it with the PH.
Correct. Zach, are there any other topics or relevant things that you'd like to discuss? WWE, beer. Are you drinking tonight, Zach?
Oh, of course I am drinking.
Are you drinking wine?
I'm enjoying a nice, what I believe to be a 2013 Chilean red.
What did you pour it from into your glass? A bag?
There's a spout that comes out of a piece of cardboard.
Oh my God. It's convenient.
You understand you wound David when you say these things.
I walked over. I see, it's convenient though, right? I mean, we were talking about stats. I walked back over to the fridge, opened that spout again, get a refill.
Sorry.
Straight out of Chile.
Chilean wine. You said Chilean red and you walked over to the fridge.
That's where the ice machine is, yeah?
What's going on here?
Food is supposed to be fresh, not old, okay? That's where you get in trouble. Some people get sick.
Fighting bacteria since 2009.
Oh, my God. Goes down smooth.
Roll damn biz.
Zach, I'm very glad that you joined us today. Thank you so much for coming and hanging out with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll have to have you back, you know, when the Mariners are officially the best team in baseball, as opposed to just untitled as they are currently.
Untitled.
Roll damn biz.
Roll damn biz.
Hey, Zach, I've got one more question for you. Something we were talking about, how stats evolve and things like that. For a long time, I've always looked to Sierra as a stat that I like, looking at batted ball profiles, ERA estimators, all that. Now that StatCast is out there and we're getting access to more and more data, do you think a new metric is going to evolve out of that, that will basically give expected results for not only batted ball type, but now that we can get that more accurate and less subjective, but we talk about exit velocity and launch angle and all that stuff. Eventually, there has to be some sort of metric that takes all of that data and averages out what the result would be on a normal basis and give a weight to that, right? Like, that seems like a stat that could become, like, extremely telling, extremely powerful. I don't know how long it's going to take to get there, but that seems like there's a future that's going to be very interesting there.
Yeah, I think we can – I'm surprised we haven't gotten there a little further with pitching, to be honest, based on all the data we do have with PitchFX and we've accumulated over the years and can sort of start making some real comparisons with some large samples. I think hitting, that'll be a big thing to come from StatCast more than pitching, simply because it's you can see more of the angle and the velocity. And so we'll get a little more granular than just saying like, oh, yeah, I hit a line drive, and just sort of classifying things in those buckets. We can get a little more down to the level.
I agree. Did you guys see that Giancarlo Stanton hit a ball at, I think it was 116.8 miles per hour earlier this week?
How many years before he's a Yankee?
God, no. Stop that. He's not going to be Bryce Harper's He's not going to be Bryce Harper's teammate.
Him and Bryce Harper might hold down the Yankee outfield.
I don't want Bryce Harper to be a Yankee so bad.
That's already happening.
It's happening. It's true.
Yeah, they are structuring their cap and their salary for that time.
Exactly.
Yeah, but they don't get Giancarlo. Somebody else should get Giancarlo. Hopefully the Red Sox. They're due for a break. I just want something great for the great fans of Boston. Finally.
The Boston sports scene could use a break.
Yes. Yes. They've suffered enough.
Bryce Harper to go Toronto.
Jesus.
How awesome. Wow.
He might hit a ball through that stadium.
If Bryce Harper's trying to chase some records, he should go to Colorado.
Just for 1 year. 1 year, $50 million. I'd love it so much. Hit 80 home runs just to prove he can and move on.
He's on pace for about 60, isn't he?
He's kind of had a rough week.
He's on pace for exactly 60.
Look at you.
Nailed it. Interneted.
Nice. You guys, let's let Zach get back to his Chilean wine.
It's chilled Chilean wine.
To perfection. Bacteria free.
What you don't know is that he walked over to a wine fridge and it came out at 58 degrees.
Ooh, delicious.
Perfect.
Is that what it's supposed to be?
I don't know, ask Skiba.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Although you don't want to drink it at 58. You store it at 58. You want to drink wine at about 72 for reds.
72?
Nice room temp. Little room 72 temp.
72 ain't room temp. I don't know about your room temp, but that's not mine.
Fine, 68. My bad.
That'll work. I don't know. That's better.
The notoriously cold Weber Manor.
I bet Zach's apartment is hotter than shit. Just keeps the heat going all day long.
That's why he's got to go to the fridge. Otherwise, the wine would be served at 85.
That's how things spoil. It's the problem.
Zach, thank you.
Hazmat director Zach Sanders.
This has been very real, Zach. Almost, I would say, too real.
Has it gone wrong? Has keeping it real gone wrong?
much you know, like Chappelle warned us. But please don't think that it means I don't love you. Oh, how I wish I could be there every day. 'Cause when I'm gone, makes me so sad and blue. Thanks to Zach for joining us today as our guest. We're going to do a quick segment here before we head out and let you actually go about to do things that are a much better use of your time than listening to us yak. David, you wanted to ask a question of Scott and I.
Sure.
Is that correct?
Wait, hold on. Yeah. We just learned what Zach was drinking. We haven't even talked about what we're drinking tonight.
Oh.
Iced Chilean wine, so what's the point?
I mean,
ice cold red wine,
straight ice cold. Back in the day, I used to work at a California pizza kitchen, and there was a lady who came often who asked for a glass of red wine with ice cubes in it every single day.
Oh,
what time of day was this?
Lunch.
Work day?
2 p.m. for a.
Oh, no, she came at like 11, like right when we opened.
Like on a Tuesday?
Oh, yeah. During the summer.
That is bleak.
Yep.
Very bleak.
Yeah, well, that was downtown Bellevue back then.
Hey, right next to the Packard building.
Unlike now, where everyone is very sober and Bellevue. Nobody there with way too much time on their hands to just sit and drink wine before noon. I am drinking the Rubens Daily Pale Seattle Beer Week Session Pale Ale.
Ooh.
Yeah, I love Rubens. You guys,
what's
like
a session pale ale? Like 3% pale ales are already pretty sessionable.
It is 4.9%.
That's
bare.
Wow. Is that
that's higher than a typical IPA session?
Hey.
Does session just mean it's under 5%?
Your argument is with Mr. Rubin and not me.
Sorry, Rubin.
Rubin is actually
I love your sandwiches. I didn't mean to be mean.
Seriously.
I do not like your thing.
Sauerkraut on everything.
Hey, California Pizza Kitchen, a.k.a. CPK, for the people to know, used to have a Rubin pizza, and it was super gross, but I loved it.
Sounds awful. This beer is good, though. Very flavorful for 4.9%. Rubin's is one of the best breweries in the city. We all agree, right? This is known.
Well,
I mean, it's good.
It's not a local brewery.
It's not a local brewery.
That's where the bar's been set.
David, what are you drinking? Right
so
now.
So I've had a bit of a journey.
Yes. Don't give me your... No. Just tell me what you're drinking. Don't embarrass the poor people.
It started with a boxed Chilean white at room temperature.
Started with some Franzia Cool White. So I opened with actually a Dark and Stormy. For those not in the know, that is simply ginger beer and dark rum. Moved on to the Flock Party by Black Raven, which is a limited release pale ale with acacia chips and fruit peel and mandarin oranges. Okay. And it was, I'll be honest, not good.
Mm. I like Black
and
Raven
I think
too.
I love Black Raven. Mm-hmm. But for me, the acacia chips just added a lot of tannin and bitterness. And in the wine biz, hashtag go biz, we once upon a time tried to age wine in acacia barrels, and it went horribly. And I think Black Raven just missed that research paper.
Oops.
Moving on to the current beer, I'm working on the Stumptown Candy Peel IPA from Bridgeport Brewing in Portland, Oregon. And it is absolutely wonderful. 6.5 alcohol by volume, and it's just an easy IPA with orange peel in it. Really nice.
So you found one.
Yeah, this one's doing me. Yeah, this is good.
Nice. A lot of sampling it took to get there.
Scott?
I am drinking a Sierra Nevada Hop Hunter IPA, which is...
I've had that, but I don't remember it.
It's my favorite of all their IPAs. Torpedo, I think, is a great everyday IPA, but Hop Hunter is better. It uses, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like fresh hop oil, and then they can use it all year round instead of just having their normal fresh hop offering, which is the celebration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hop extract is... we don't need to get into it here, but
yes,
debatable.
Well, I
suspect.
You're suspect. I think it's a delicious beer. I like it very much. And on deck, I have a Bud Light Screw Top. No, it's... I mean,
no.
Stay on brand, Scott. Stay on brand. You're doing
sorry. On deck, I have an Elysian. It is Super Fuzz. That's what I was drinking a couple weeks ago. But I still got some left.
Nice. I like Super Fuzz. Legit. David, what is your question?
Okay, so I have two current trends as of May 4th, and I want to see where you guys line up with them. Two things right now, if we follow the current trend, will be happening after Game 162. The first will be that the Mariners have 95 wins. The second is that Robinson Cano will have 54 home runs. And I am wondering if you two, or whichever of you wants to go first, where you think, given this start by both of them, the M's end up win-wise, if you want to addend that, and how many home runs from Robinson Cano in 2016?
Do you want us to answer them both or to go one by one?
Whatever you choose.
Okay, I'll go first. All right. I'll go first with wins, and then I'll let Scott do wins, and then we'll go reverse.
Okay, cool.
Okay, ooh, like, we're snake it.
You snake it up.
Topsy-turvy that motherfucker.
I'll take wins. I think I had the team at 85. 84 wins, or
I think you were 83. I'll be honest.
Okay, let's say
80. I was 83.
Yeah, let's say 83 at the beginning of the year. Okay. The team's definitely gotten off to a better start than I expected. I don't necessarily think that they're a suddenly better team than I thought that they were at the beginning of the year. However, the wins that they have now in the bank are the ones that count. And I still think they can make a lot of hay, like I said earlier in the show, in May. So yeah, I'll upgrade it to, I think that right now as it sits, they're looking like an 86 to 88 win team. And I think that that could definitely be enough to snag a wild card spot, if not the AL West, with the way it's going. I feel good.
Mm. Yum.
Delicious. Playoffs. So
unlike my first beer.
Mmm. Well done. Bridge. No, Black Raven.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
It's okay. We'll get over it.
It's fine. Mm-hmm. Can't win them all.
Gotti?
What's up? Oh, sorry. Long time caller, first time listener. it's adjusted a little bit for me. Like Nathan said, those wins are in the bank. They count. I think getting out of the gate is nice. I'm encouraged by the offense. Some things, like we said, bullpen a little over Ted right now. I think there's going to be some swings. I'll still play it safe, and I was at 83 before. I'll put him at 85, 86 now, although if we have a nice week or two after that, that could go to 88, 89 real quick, just because love that recency bias.
Hell yeah. What about Robbie Cano's 54 home runs? How many?
I was going to ask really quickly for both of you before we get to Robbie. How many wins in each of yours heads wins the AL West?
87.
I say 90.
Okay. And now Robbie Cano home runs.
I'm going to say 28.
Bastard. Okay. That's 19 more bombs the rest of the year.
He's banked enough that I think that that's realistic, but I also think that the power is going to be above what it was last year. And yeah. He's just making such, like, God, that homer that he just hit, where it was just an like a left center field flick, and it just kept on carrying out. Like, that guy's got so much life left to give.
That grand slam at home off the bat looked like it was going to be caught in the right center field gap.
Ludicrous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that
so
one.
I'll go 28.
Okay. I agree with. I was going to say 30, which we're right there in the same thing. But like, and also a lot of my commentary was going to be the same as yours. I remember he hit a ball towards the end of last year when he was ridiculous and playing with two hernias. There was a lot like the home run he hit last night, but it was in Safeco where he just, you know, flicks his hands and rips a line drive to left center field out at Safeco Field. And I just remember thinking, I don't think since Griffey we've had a left-hander that hits that kind of home run. Russell Branyan had the power to do that, but his were rainmakers, you know what I mean, like he would just hit these bombs, but Robbie's getting out on his front foot but keeping his hand back and still just line driving a ball out to left center field. I don't remember the last Mariner hitter we had from the left side that could really drive the ball that way. So I think he hits 30. Again, I think much like the Mariners win total, his power is not indicative of something that makes me radically change my projection, but just that it's already happened. He already has 9 home runs, you know?
Yeah.
So it's hard to not be excited. It's pretty freaking awesome.
Pretty cool.
Pretty damn good.
Should we move on to some Twitter question and answer?
I would love to. Thank you.
As our social media maven, please proceed, Skiba.
Yes, the maven of social media dictates a tweet from Dan Gomez.
Oh, Gomez.
Can follow at
Fat Bottom
Gomez.
Girl himself.
You can follow Dan Gomez, a good friend of all of ours, at Gomez Dan.
Ooh, how'd he come up with
dot com.
I don't know. It's almost as if he just kind of flipped it around a little bit.
Nice. Topsy turvy, that motherfucker.
What's his question?
So his question to us is, the M's win the World Series, but this is Felix now. Acceptable.
Who's going first?
I will
go
first.
You already know my answer.
Hell yes. No question. Hell yes.
I will back that up. So I argued with Scott over the one of whether we would trade him and win the World Series, but I agree with hell yes for two reasons. One, my whole thing has not been that I need Felix to be the reason we win the World Series. I just want him to be on a Mariner team that makes the playoffs to like be a part of all of it. And the other one is that I'm a little bit scared that we're going to have him the way he is now, whether we win the World Series or not.
Yeah. So, we better win a World Series because he's not.
Yeah, this
changing.
Is like trying to file a claim on a pre-existing condition.
Yes.
You win the World Series, but your knees still don't work.
Yeah, they were already fucked. And I get to win the lottery? Okay. Yeah. Scott, you don't feel any differently, right?
Yeah. I'd win the World Series at any cost. Like, I would literally trade everybody on the team at the deadline if we got new players that would make us win the World Series.
What would you not do to win the World Series?
I mean, there's some things.
Are you sure? Is there something?
But in personnel moves, there's really nothing.
Okay.
Do it.
I think I would agree. Like, what is that? Yeah. What would be a good core?
Win at all costs.
Who's
Al
the,
Davis?
Who's the... He's not feeling good because Nelson Cruz hit a ball off of his coffin today.
Damn. Is that where they keep it?
I think so. Right under Mount Davis.
It's cold.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, yeah. I think that as far what is the World Series winning team that's like most exemplifies that, like, I don't give a shit about the future. I'm going for it now. And it worked. Kind of roster. My inclination is the Phillies of 2000, I think
2007
or 2008 beat the Rays. Yeah,
like that's the most recent team that was just like.
I mean, the Marlins have two World Series rings. There can't be another.
But those
franchise
rosters,
more like who gives a hell?
But couldn't those rosters have theoretically continued to compete afterwards if they hadn't just immediately sold everybody after they won?
Hadn't had a Tobias Fünke fire sale immediately after.
I'm just trying to think of rosters that like they maxed out to win, did so, and then immediately paid the price. And I guess the Phillies didn't they make the World Series the next year?
I think a few that did it that failed, like the
2013 Red Sox.
Yeah, didn't they just kind of get lucky as shit though? I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You know, what team got lucky as shit was the 06 Cardinals.
Yeah,
that's a litmus test.
They didn't make. They just. Shitted their way to a World Series. God, I wish we could do that one time.
That's all I want to make the playoffs for.
Yeah.
Is just to get lucky. Like, realistically, I know that this is not like a dynasty in the making right now. This team is old as fuck. So get us in the playoffs and we'll just get lucky.
Yeah.
Get hot.
I think, who was it? I'm going to miss who it was that said it on Twitter or in Slack today, but somebody said, I think it was Andrew. Said that he would really love it if the Mariners like squeaked into the playoffs and then beat like a 115 win Cub team in the World Series.
That would be amazing. It'd be incredible.
I would love that so much. It'd be so good.
So the next question we have is from Eric, and I'm going to say his last wrong name, I bet.
Last wrong name.
Eric. Ugh. Eric Theriau.
Theriau?
And you can Theriau.
The Riot?
Theriault.
Oh, bro, you lost me. French. I had it, and then you went ULT. And
it's just Theriau.
Theriau. Eric Theriau.
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 Okay. And you can follow him at Eric O. Theriau.
Theriau. Oh,
that's just...
And he asks us,
anybody.
Are there any hashtag Mariners prospects in the minors we're looking forward to?
No.
To which I also laugh.
No, not they totally are. Wait.
Boog, I'm excited for Boog whenever he eventually makes it.
What's what do we define?
Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah.
Tyler O'Neill's
Heredia. We know you love Heredia.
Diaz, man.
Yeah, that's true. Edwin Diaz is off to a killer start.
Yeah, and Tyler O'Neill, like, I mean, what do we say why we're excited? Like, we expect him to come up this year and be a productive major leaguer?
I don't know. Ask Eric. Yes.
I can't. I don't know how to say his last name. It'd be awkward.
Well, we're looking forward to. I am definitely looking forward to Heredia.
I think
when he gets called up and he comes in and pinch runs for, like, Adam Lind in the bottom of the eighth and steals a bag, I'm going to be freaking out. That's going to be cool.
Do you know what Heredia's career stolen base to caught stealing ratio is? 20 stolen bases, 26 times caught stealing.
Oh, it's probably bad.
What?
That includes Cuba.
Not great.
Cuba.
Yeah, but...
He's tried to steal 3 times this year in Jackson. He's been caught all 3 times.
Really?
Hey, being fast doesn't make you a good base runner.
Well, I mean, I know that, but I mean, whatever.
Do you?
I don't.
I'm excited about Tyler O'Neill. This team would really, it'd be really cool to develop our own slugger. And
a power bat would be
20 huge. And double A and like all of the peripherals trending in the right direction while he continues to hit baseballs very hard is exciting. So I'm definitely excited for him. I'm also a sucker for power and overemphasize the tool almost at every turn. So
I'm just stoked that he got out of Bakersfield.
Yep.
And then he got into Jackson. He's actually walking now.
Yep.
Because he didn't walk last year. That was kind of this isn't horrible, but the strikeout to walk ratio was very off. And he struck out a ton. And he's still striking out a ton, but he's drawing walks now. So that's encouraging, I guess.
Sure.
We haven't produced a bat since Kyle, have we?
Defined bat.
I mean, Brad Miller.
We don't have a current player who's a bat who we put through the system besides Kyle, yeah?
Brad Miller?
He's not on the team.
He's not? Yes. You know why he's not?
Because we traded our starting shortstop for Wade Miley.
And now look who we're stuck with, this really fun and exciting young guy.
Oh, shit. We have
That's not true. Wow. We traded our starting shortstop for Nate Carnes.
Worked out just fine. I like Nate Carnes.
Oh, that's right. Wade Miley was Carson.
Dudes, do we have any other questions?
All right, so we have an interesting one.
I'll be the judge of
the gatekeeper.
From Stephen DeYoung, 93, at Stephen DeYoung, 93.
Oh, someone from your generation.
we're a couple years off. I don't think we'd talk well. Who has the next final season Love Fest tour, a la Jeter and David Ortiz?
Oh, it's gotta be. Oh shit, he said David Ortiz. Like I said, long time caller, first time listener.
the one that comes to mind is A-Rod, but I don't think he gets the tour
He doesn't. Everybody hates him. I'm trying to think of somebody that would be older that plays for a legacy team where it'd be forced down somebody's throat. I can't think of anybody. I mean, like it sounds like the Cubs are kind of giving like an inner circle David Ross send off.
Is it? That's tough. I mean, how far are we go? Adrian Beltre seems like a guy who could he just signed an extension. Like we're 2 years out.
Adrian also seems like the kind of dude that would just tell people to fuck off if they tried to give him a retirement tour.
Do the fans of the MLB love Adrian Beltre like we do because we had him for 5 years? I don't think they.
I think they love him.
I don't think he's appreciated.
He gets a lot of love, like in social media, because he's got that whole "don't touch my head" thing, and then he's always goofing around in the infield with Andrus. So I think a lot of people like him a lot. We just like him because we know him more intimately.
I think he's. I mean, I this is total speculation. I have nothing to back this up, but he comes across as one of the most beloved players by other players in all of MLB. Like, dudes love that guy.
Yeah,
love him. They love playing with him. They respect playing against him. Like, I've never seen anybody that has a bad thing to say about Adrian Beltre. So I don't know if that translates, like David's asking, to the average fan. But Scott, I mean, it's a good point. Like his whole and his you know, screw around relationship with Elvis Andrus, too, where the head touching is only part of that. Like, there's a lot of love about that guy, but the Rangers aren't the kind of team that generally gets players that do a year wide send off. So I just don't, maybe if he got traded to another team, like the Yankees or something.
He did have a year in Boston.
Oh, maybe I know what that'll it is. Give him the... I know the answer to this question.
Okay.
It's Ichiro.
Ooh. But who does he play for when it happens? It?
Doesn't really matter. Is there a guy who is more primed to retire? He's going to get 3,000 hits this year, probably. If not, he'll play another year until he gets it.
Does his contract go till next year? Is this his final year of his contract?
Yeah, it's just a one-year deal. Yeah.
But he'll keep. Yeah, that's a good call. I mean, and I'd be fine with that. What that guy's meant for baseball globally is, in my opinion, worthy, hell of a lot more worthy of a send off than Derek Jeter's ability to play with really good Yankee teammates for two decades, and like make average ground balls in the hole look hard because he can jump and throw at the same time. Good job, Derek.
If you're Jerry, do you trade for Ichiro at the deadline to get him the 3,000th hit in a Mariners?
The Mariners are bad.
Jesus, what do you know? No.
Okay. Well, I'm just throwing stuff out. If you're Jerry, do you trade for Alex Rodriguez to add a little more pop to the lineup at the deadline?
Dude, I would so take it.
David, I am so gonna pull the plug on this episode. Like, We're not airing any of the last 2 minutes.
I'm like the only guy in the world that holds no, like I hold no ill will towards A-Rod.
I got nothing.
And I still him. Like I don't mind him at all.
He seems fine.
And it's our fault that we burned all that
so
service
then,
time.
So then why don't you want A-Rod? So Nathan, why don't you want A-Rod at the deadline?
Yeah. Why do I hate
yeah,
him,
Nathan? Yeah,
because
yeah.
he does PEDs, obviously. Still,
well, I mean,
not anymore.
He obviously still does. He's
we
you
love,
know
we love Nelson Cruz.
You saw that? Well, that's because he plays for
yeah,
my
you
team
love Nelson
and hits
Cruz.
Home runs very
oh,
far.
Nelson
well, A-Rod
Cruz
could theoretically be put into that
can
bucket.
Can we talk about how funny it is to like try to get fans in the gotcha of being a hypocrite and like how that's like I won this argument with you because you like this guy but not that guy. Because that is such total horseshit. Of course I like this guy.
Do
he's
you
on my
just
team.
Like Nelson Cruz because
he just hit a baseball like 700 feet. Of course I like him, dumbass.
Do you like Nelson Cruz because he has nice eyebrows and A-Rod doesn't?
It's just such a stupid argument. It drives me crazy. Of course I'm biased and hypocritical. I am a sports fan. Congratulations, very detached Yankee fan. You win this argument.
Oh, sorry you only won 86 games this year.
They're not winning 86 games. It's the best thing.
No, not this year.
They're going to win 75.
Oh, it's so good.
I had a coworker actually come into my office today and start yelling about how George would not have allowed this. And it was the highlight of my day.
Oh. Which George?
It's. I mean, in a way, he wouldn't have. Everyone would be fired.
I mean, are we talking Steinbrenner or are we talking Costanza, assistant to the traveling secretary? You the guys that put us in that Ramada in Milwaukee?
Just should have switched to cotton uniforms.
You want to talk about hotels? You want to win ball games.
Is this segment
hey, we won the World Series. 6 games. I know, Seinfeld.
Oh, this segment.
No, seriously, what do we think the Yankees are going to finish at? I mean, they're 8-16.
They're going to win 75 games.
The AL East is, I mean, the Red Sox look more legit than I thought they were.
The AL East, I think that's the Red Sox division to lose, honestly. All
right.
The Orioles might give it a go.
Trumbo.
No. Do we feel bad for Pablo Sandoval or not at all?
Yes.
I feel bad for him.
I do.
He hasn't had the surgery yet. We don't know.
He's about to.
Yeah. He's gonna be out for the year. I feel bad for that guy because he clearly has no self-control at all.
And because he signed with, like, the second that contract got announced, it was like, that is the worst team for you to sign with.
Not going to work out.
Yeah.
Man, Boston made some bad contracts.
Well, yeah, but Pablo Sandoval's making a lot of money.
Oh yeah, he's still got.
I don't feel
three more years after this on that deal.
You know what that
5-year deal?
You know what that food can buy? A lot of
happiness.
A lot of food.
Lobster.
All I'm saying is, I mean, like of all the people I feel bad for in the MLB, Pablo Sandoval's making a lot.
It's true, he is. You guys, let's wrap it up. We're long. What should we end on? Final thoughts.
This is fun.
Okay, let's play. Where do we want to be next time we record? Let's say we do it on Wednesday. Record hope.
Hawaii. Oh, record.
Are we looking for? What are we thinking out of Houston?
I still think that team's good, and I expect them to play better.
I think they turned it around. I hope it's not against us.
I would love to get a split. If we get a split, I'll be
good. Yeah, I agree.
2-2 would be fine for me.
That's fine.
Yeah, after a sweep of the A's on the road, sure.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. If the team rolls into our next recording Wednesday night, no days off. Is that right?
Yeah, and then we will be.
So they've got 7 games.
The Rays will
have 8
finished up before we record next Wednesday.
So they'll have 7 games.
7.
So they'll have 7 games. So if they've got 20 wins at that point, we're good, baby. I got no problems. Cool. We'll hope for 20 wins. And then we're going to call that a quit and a wrap on this episode. Thanks for joining us on Dome and Bedlam. Scott and David, thank you guys for your time. We're kind of grateful to Zach Sanders for joining us in the midst of debasing alcohol for everyone forever. And we'll plan on seeing you guys next week. And Goms and Go Biz. And thank you for listening.
Let's go on, the lights go off, when things don't feel right, but I'm like a tired dog.
sunsets are.